This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This is a Radio.com original.
This is Coronavirus Daily, World on Pause. I'm Charles Feldman from the KNXRadio.com studios in Los Angeles.
And I'm Mike Simpson. Early on in this pandemic, the scientists figured there were lots of people spreading the virus without realizing it, the asymptomatic cases. Some studies showed maybe 45% of people with the coronavirus would never experience symptoms, or at least not feel them strong enough to know. New research is out, shows the rates of asymptomatic carriers about 18%. So we'll look into what that difference means and what it changes or what it doesn't.
Now, we've talked a bit about Europe's second wave of cases. It could be much worse than the first one.
We'll get an update on the vaccine trials from doctors who are directly involved in one of them.
But let us start with the news about asymptomatic cases. Dr. David Aronoff is director of the Division of Infectious Diseases at the Vanderbilt University Medical Center. Doctor, theories as to why these numbers have been changing?
Well, I think the main point is we know that people without noticeable symptoms or symptoms that are really bothering them are continuing to drive this pandemic. And what we're seeing in a study like the one you mentioned, for example, is based on very careful surveying of families and households where somebody tests positive for COVID-19 and then really scouring for symptoms in household members. And that kind of research is sort of designed to really pick up on very sensitive symptoms that maybe somebody otherwise wouldn't necessarily think about. So I think the big point here is that there is a substantial fraction of people who are shedding SARS-CoV-2 virus, and they're just not aware of it.
Well, and as you know, in the very early days, a few months ago of the pandemic, everyone was told, you know, look out for high fever, for coughing. Then it kind of moved into, well, but a lot of people have no symptoms. But I gather from what you're saying is that what these studies are showing is that there's a whole range of symptoms that have been kind of below the radar screen that people don't really equate with COVID. And so they don't feel particularly sick. They don't go to their doctor. Nobody knows.
I think that's part of it. I think, you know, if it was simply a matter of isolating people who were having the kinds of symptoms you mentioned, cough, fever, shortness of breath, we wouldn't be in this pandemic, that's for sure. This pandemic is being fueled by silent transmission events where people are gathering together, one or more of those people are infected, and they really don't know it. And maybe they've got very, very mild symptoms that they're not even really cognizant of, but more likely than not, there is really a meaningful fraction of people who are shedding virus and not symptomatic or not yet symptomatic. Remember that for the people who do get symptoms, they spend 2 or 3 days shedding virus before they develop symptoms. And that is really a dangerous part of this illness.
We've also added more symptoms to the list as we've gone along, as we've noted plenty of times here. What about the difference, too, between asymptomatic and pre-symptomatic. You know, you could think for a few days that you're not going to have anything show up, but then later on down the line, yeah, you do, and it could be one of these new ones.
Yeah, really good point. As we've just talked about, somewhere between 20% and 40% of people who are infected never seem to get symptoms, or the symptoms they have just don't register. We consider them asymptomatic, and they tend to shed less virus than someone with symptoms. However, for that majority of people who go on after they're infected to have symptoms, for that 2 to 3 days before their first symptom starts, they're in that pre-symptomatic window. They are shedding a tremendous amount of virus, similar to the amount they're shedding when their symptoms finally arrive. And it's those two groups, the people who are truly asymptomatic and the people who are about to be symptomatic, that are really fueling this ongoing pandemic.
Can you give us briefly some examples of some of the symptoms that perhaps in the past nobody equated with COVID, that somebody now who might be listening to this maybe has, and they're not even thinking that, maybe this is COVID?
Yeah, really good point. First of all, some people develop low-grade body temperature elevations, low-grade fevers, and they don't really realize it. That's one reason businesses are often checking for fever in their employees that they're just not aware of. Second of all, it may be something that seems benign, like a stuffy nose, a slight sore throat, some nasal congestion, or a cough that you just attribute simply to something else. And then we're also seeing people with mild stomach upset. So maybe all they have is a little bit of nausea or a little bit of diarrhea. And that absolutely can be the earliest symptoms of COVID, but it's just not very specific.
Your big picture worries as we head into the next couple months. I mean, we are inching closer and closer to this, 100,000 case a day mark, and it's just going to get colder in the parts of the country that get cold.
Well, you really hit the nail on the head there. I think the big concern is that as people go indoors, that they may be congregating with people who they don't live with. They may not be wearing face coverings. They may have extended contact periods of time indoors to stay warm. And that's what's going to foster virus moving from person to person. So I really urge people, be careful. Try to stay in well-ventilated areas. Watch the distance between you and others. Wear your face coverings when you're indoors. And definitely, this is the season to get your flu shot.
Is it too late to head off these worst-case scenarios? And I'm guessing as a doctor, you're going to say, well, it's never too late. But sometimes it is too late. Is it?
No, I don't think so at all, because we showed early in this pandemic, and we've shown in different states, that when you get people to wear face coverings and you have stay-at-home orders, or you tell people just go out for necessities or don't have gatherings, and you can get public buy-in to do the things that are necessary to reduce transmission, absolutely the numbers turn around. And that's exactly what we saw earlier this summer. And unfortunately, we're in a situation now where we're on our heels a bit, and we really have to get people to buy into this idea that public health begins with individual actions and individual decisions to play your part to help this slow down, and I know we can do it.
Dr. David Arnoff directs the Division of Infectious Diseases of Vanderbilt University.
The U.S. is facing another surge of cases right now, many in the Midwest. This country is far from alone in dealing with a spike. European countries are facing a second wave.
Many health experts say it could be worse than the first. WBBM's Cisco Cotto talks to Bloomberg News health reporter Michelle Cortez about how bad it could get.
Saw a really terrifying wave early in the outbreak, right, in New York City, where everything was overwhelmed in the city and in the surrounding New York area, New Jersey, Connecticut. Now we're seeing those levels of infection happening across the country. There are many places in the U.S. that have very small numbers of hospital, medical care. Those can get overwhelmed quickly, and there's nowhere to go to relieve some of this pressure. We are seeing this happening sooner in Europe, and the U.S. is following. There's more cold air. People are inside. We're going to have the holidays, and with people gathering, we're expecting it to get worse.
And are we seeing, well, let's talk about hospitalizations, because it seems like the cases, yes, that's important. You don't want the cases to rise, but the hospitalizations are the really serious issue. We're seeing that go up, too.
Exactly. Across the board, we are seeing increases in hospitalizations and the follow-on deaths that are occurring. And it's happening again across the entire United States. So this is something that we knew was going to happen. As we were doing more testing, we were finding more cases. So we knew people more people were ill, and the deaths, because the hospitalizations and deaths lag, it looked like there was somehow we were just finding people and it wasn't as bad anymore. But of course, that's not the case. The deaths and the hospitalizations do follow, and that's what we're seeing now.
And that's why you get even more emphasis on social distancing and even some of the shutdowns that have been happening. Even in those, you know, those have not really proven any more popular than they were at the beginning.
People definitely don't want to go back down into lockdowns. You know, you don't want to have to quarantine in your house. And, you know, these are our last few days of you know, good weather and whatnot. So people want to be able to get out there and do things. But the bottom line is that we don't have a vaccine now. We don't really have a treatment that can help you. I mean, there is the antibodies that President Trump got, but those aren't approved. If you go to the hospital, you won't be able to get that unless you're able to participate in a clinical trial, and even then you might get a placebo. So the bottom line is the only thing we have are things like social distancing and wearing a mask. And if we don't turn it around now, then entire swaths of the country are either going to have to shut down, or we are probably going to be looking at overwhelming our hospitals and then just very large numbers of hospitalizations and deaths. And it's, you know, do you want to wear a mask, or do you want people to die? That's literally the choice.
Michelle Cortez, thanks for your insight.
Coming up after this short break, we're moving closer toward a coronavirus vaccine. Doctors at Stanford University are starting their work on the third and final phase of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine trial. They'll work with 1,000 patients.
Some will get the vaccine, others get the placebo. KCBS's Rebecca Corral talks to Stanford infectious disease professor Philip Grant, who is the trial's principal investigator.
Patients will come in and either get the vaccine or the placebo. And if they get ill with symptoms that are consistent with COVID, they'll get tested. If they don't get ill, we'll follow them for 2 years for safety.
Okay, so what is it that we're hoping to find out through this?
We're hoping to find out if the vaccine works and also if it's safe.
Okay, and this is why we're looking for 2 years, because you know, it'll be approved before that, presumably.
It should be approved. We expect to see the data come out in 4 to 6 months from now, so sometime next spring. Likely will be approved. Patients will stay on study, but they can get the real vaccine if it gets approved prior to the end of the study. But we want 2 years to make sure it's safe over a long period of time.
I see. And so did you say that people can get the vaccine once it's approved, or do they need to be done with the study?
No, they'll stay on the study regardless. You know, if a vaccine is approved, they can stay on the study and get another vaccine.
Okay. And what is the age range of the folks who will be in this?
18 until unlimited age at the upper end.
Okay. And how do you choose the people who are going to take part?
We want a couple distinct groups. We want to have individuals who are at risk in their household, workplace. So we can see whether it works. And we also want to have individuals who are older than 60, so we make sure it's safe in that age range.
Okay, so this is a Johnson & Johnson study?
That's correct.
All right, so I'm just wondering how it fits into the other studies that are taking part.
There's around 12 studies globally that are looking at different coronavirus vaccines in phase 3. And there's a lot of different methodologies in terms of whether it's an mRNA, whether just using protein, like on the standard flu vaccine methodology. This is an adenovirus vector vaccine, which is used as a shell of adenovirus. And then the body makes a spike protein and then makes immune response. Differences between other ones, it's only a single shot. It also doesn't require the same cold chain as other vaccines will.
Okay, so one brand can get approval before another?
Absolutely. Yeah, each one, when they have enough data, we'll submit the paperwork to the FDA for review.
So I wonder how people will decide which one to get, or do we pick?
I think a lot of it will be like any other issues in health, you know, which blood pressure medication you end up on. So there may be some differences in response by age group. Side effect profile may be different from one to one. There may be differences in efficacy. So I think it's to be determined which ones will be appropriate for different populations. That's where we know. That's what we know right now.
Would they all be basically similar in what's in them?
All of them are going to allow the body to make the immune response to the spike protein, which is the outside of the coronavirus. But there's different ways the body or the vaccine is allowing the body to make that immune response. Like I said, some will just be injecting the protein itself with an adjuvant to make the body have a better response. Some inject the encoding instructions, the mRNA vaccines, and the adenovirus vector vaccines are using a common cold virus that's been manipulated to have on this inside encoding instructions for the spike protein. So there's different ways that the vaccines get the body to produce the immune response, but the end result should be similar in that all the vaccines have shown to be safe and effective will be making the body produce immunity to the spike protein.
Okay, we've got to go, but do you have all the people you need, or is there a way for volunteers to get involved?
No, we definitely want more volunteers. The study site is very easy to manipulate. It's both in English and Spanish, and it's ensemblestudy.com.
You may remember we told you last week about a study from Great Britain about how coronavirus antibodies diminish over time. Well, that might have had you thinking that immunity doesn't last long at all. But a new study out of Britain found cellular immunity is present after 6 months in people who had even mild or asymptomatic COVID-19. Now, that suggests they might have some level of protection for at least that time. Researchers found that while some of the patients' antibody levels had dropped, their T-cell response remained strong. Now, T-cells are another key part of our immune system.
Well, I like this study much better than the other
one. Yes.
You can find us on the radio.com app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
I've always liked tea. Oh, they're talking about tea soon.
Yeah, both.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at omicid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.